This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Critics of online school plans like to talk about the bad effects of screen time on kids. An ISU scholar says it's not the time, it's the quality that matters.
The amount of screen time isn't what's really key in children's social-emotional learning, in their learning of concepts and academic concepts either. Rather, it's what they're doing on the screen.
Hear about remote learning from Illinois State University education expert Anna Smith. Plus, Bloomington considers ditching the Columbus Day holiday for Indigenous Peoples Day, changes ahead for the Illinois Arts Station, and Normal Mayor Pro Tem Kevin McCarthy stops by. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. A McLean County jury has found a Decatur man guilty of murder in the 2018 shooting death of 20-year-old Egerton Dover of Bloomington. The jury convicted Taiwan Bruce on all charges after deliberating less than a day. The defense says the state's case was a 500-piece puzzle with 495 pieces missing. Prosecutor Tamara Wagner disagrees.
For us, it was clear, but that's because we had the benefit of the Bloomington Police Department, who did a phenomenal job of digging through the evidence and finding and locating the witnesses and pulling the surveillance videos that became important.
Dover was killed in a botched drug robbery. Another co-defendant, Anthony Gramsis, was convicted of murder last month. McLean County health officials announced 3 new coronavirus cases today, and 2 COVID-19 patients have been released from the hospital. The county's active caseload dipped slightly from its record high. According to the McLean County Health Department, 4 COVID patients remain hospitalized, including 1 in intensive care. 137 are isolating at home. The 7-day positivity rate in McLean County dipped slightly to 2%. Child care programs for Bloomington Normal students are filling up with less than a week until the start of the fall semester. The programs are meant to help parents who aren't able to supervise their children's remote learning. Unit 5 parent Jamie Riddle enrolled her second grader in the Normal Parks and Recreation Day Camp, but says the programs give participating students an unfair advantage.
We think it's worth it to do this for what's best for our daughter, but some people don't have that option of a credit card or just have an extra $1,000 laying around to be able to do this. So, you know, those, like the lower income families and kids, I feel like they're just going to fall by the wayside.
Riddle says it feels like a slap in the face to have to pay more to make sure her child is able to keep up with school. She says she doesn't understand why Unit 5 is allowing the day camps to operate in school buildings when in-person classes were considered too risky. Unit 5 has said that the density of students is far less than usual in the day camps. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
A new police union contract for the town of Normal includes 1.25% raises for officers each year of the agreement. The increase will be about $235,000 over the life of the contract. That's among the actions the town council approved. Joining us to talk about that is Mayor Pro Tem Kevin McCarthy, who chaired the council meeting. In a recession, when town revenues are falling amid a pandemic, did negotiators, staff, and council give thought to having a pay freeze, as some businesses are doing?
Certainly that was considered during, obviously, hard times. But also, I think, on the other side of that equation is, with what's going on, certainly nationally and here locally, you know, right now is a very tough time to be a police officer, and we want to make sure that our police force understands that that they're doing a good job, and frankly, to make sure that we can attract and retain good quality officers in our community. It's not hard for police to be moving on from communities, depending on the circumstances of what's going on in the community, and we want to make sure that that's not the scenario here. Plus, I think it's extremely reasonable contract.
A couple of council members had comments tangential to the contract. Kimberly Cummings noted the contract is separate from the issue of defunding police as part of the national dialogue on race and police. Councilmember Stan Nord asked whether police are adequately funded to respond to today's needs, implying he thinks an increase might be merited. How should the town council grapple with the complicated and politically fraught question of police funding or defunding?
Yeah, so all of these issues are kind of getting conflated together, and they're all really separate issues. So for your listening audience, I want to be clear here what the distinctions are in these conversations. And so last night we were purely talking about their employment contracts, and which has nothing to do with the budget to fund police operations. That's a separate conversation altogether.
How do you think that conversation will happen?
Which one?
To fund or defund the police, and what to do if they are defunded. Most proponents of so-called defunding say they want to redirect dollars to human services that might actually lessen the need for police enforcement. Is there appetite on the council for that discussion?
I think there's always an appetite on our council to discuss, community need. And I think that, I believe in your publication or on your in a news story, I think Ms. Cummings, who you talked about Charlie a minute ago, was quoted as saying is that, the police are the front end of this, but I believe roughly quoting her is that, this is a community problem, not a police problem, and that certainly, we need a community solution and a dialogue with the police, with the council, with the community is certainly what's necessary, listening to what's going on out there. I don't know that defunding our police department, is the answer. Certainly looking at how we police and how our public safety job is executed is certainly, always a good idea, right? I don't know that there's any movement to systematically try to defund our police at this time. Let me put it this way. I'm not aware of any conversation going on about that.
Governor Pritzker has publicly encouraged municipalities to pass their own mask ordinances in addition to the new state order setting up an escalating scale of warnings and fines against businesses that fail to make a good faith effort to enforce compliance. How do you feel about a local ordinance perhaps offering even more options?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. At the outset, I guess, first, I'm not aware that anybody's having that conversation in the town of Normal. I'm not really a fan of layering rules on top of rules. I think most citizens would agree with that. If we get complaints, which we have been, and I've certainly gotten some complaints shared with me about, what's happening at certain businesses at certain times.
Or certain apartment complexes.
What we're preferring to do is, at times, the police have been dispatched to ask the business owners to comply. And, what we really need here is all of our business owners and business leaders to work together rather than try to layer a bunch of more rules on top of people. This is for the health of our community, certainly public health concerns, but the economic viability of our community. And, you brought up the governor. He's made no bones that he is willing to move us back to phase three if our metrics go in the wrong direction, if our positivity rate continues to tick up like we just saw, that he'll move us backwards into phase three. That would be devastating for our local businesses.
Normal Town Council Member Kevin McCarthy, thank you.
Thank you very much, Charlie. Always a pleasure.
The mayors, or in this case, Mayor Pro Tem, join us on Sound Ideas the day after most council meetings. Next week, Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, and you're listening to Sound Ideas.
Another common cultural flashpoint is now before the Bloomington City Council. Bloomington staff will examine converting the Columbus Day holiday to a holiday honoring indigenous people. A majority of the council indicated some support, at least for research on the question, during a committee of the whole work session Monday night. Councilmember Jen Carrillo promoted the idea using similar language to an earlier proposal to consider a Juneteenth holiday. Last fall, the council passed a proclamation honoring Indigenous Peoples Day. Carrillo says she wants to go further because recent events make such an action more urgent.
Over the last 4 years especially, we've seen a significant increase in explicitly white supremacist organizing and activities, both in our community and in the country. But also as a society, I think we've started to connect the dots about the ways that white supremacy shows up in the most explicit ways and then also in more covert ways.
Carrillo says those covert examples include monuments, statues, landmarks named for certain people, and holidays celebrated. Not everybody supports Carrillo. Councilmember Donna Bolin, for one.
I believe that cancel culture removes the opportunity for dialogue and to study world history. Actually, if you study history, Columbus Day is a Italian-American holiday, and so what I see being suggested is a substitution of one culture for another.
Another council member sees more nuance than strict substitution. Julie Emig says it's not usurping. She says canceling Columbus is not dismissing Italian Americans, just removing an honor from someone who created a lot of harm to Native Americans. She says there's also a political purpose to the original Columbus Day holiday that may no longer be relevant.
And actually seemed to be more about Italians trying to regain status and recognition in a country that was very oppressive of them at the time. So they grabbed onto what they perceived as an icon. And he's Italian, people like him, so they wanted to associate with him.
To others, the current understanding of Columbus Day in the broadest sense is the real problem. For Jeff Craybill, honoring Columbus is a poor use of a colonialist symbol that resulted in the large-scale death by disease and military conquest of people already living in North America before Europeans arrived.
I think it's common knowledge that this day is celebrated as discovering America. In essence, it's all about what he did against indigenous people.
The idea of Columbus Day began in 1869 in California. Councilmember Johnny Painter says it started as a response to a lynching of 11 Italian Americans. Columbus Day did not become a federal holiday until 1937. Painter says she's conflicted about a switch because the city can't undo the federal holiday status and government offices will remain closed and the mail won't be delivered.
I don't necessarily think we should replace one with the other. I don't have a problem with Indigenous Peoples Day as we had last year. Just do what we did then in perpetuity. That's fine with me. But I'm not in favor of replacing one with the other.
Councilmember Scott Black says he does not have a strong opinion.
In my view, like right now in the middle of a global pandemic, so I think staff attention should be on that.
The council earlier approved examination of a Juneteenth holiday proposed by Councilmember Mboka Mulambwe, recognizing the emancipation of slaves. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media. An Illinois State University education expert has some advice for parents this fall. Get used to thinking about what your kid is doing every day as remote learning, not online learning. Anna Smith says it's an important distinction. She teaches learning technology at ISU's College of Education. Of all the new buzzwords parents are learning, Smith tells Ryan Denham about the difference between remote and online.
From a parent's point of view, what I'm seeing happening, I might have a teacher create an activity for a child to do, and the child's doing that not synchronously online, and I might be wondering, you know, oh, where's the teacher? Or how are they getting feedback? But the purpose for that is because our learning, we want to be able to use our whole bodies in our learning. So we want children to be sorting things, drawing things, creating things, and then having engagement and interaction with their teacher and other students in the classroom. But if we are thinking of everything needs to be synchronous at the same time in a live call, let's say, then that actually limits what we can do in terms of our learning activities. If everything has to be done on the screen with a computer, we don't have that full range of things that that we need in order to learn different concepts and ideas.
Parents, you know, we are all embarking on this grand experiment that's never been done before. I guess knowing what you know about technology and learning, what advice would you give to parents about how to prepare ourselves, how to set our expectations in a good place?
It's hard to look at the bright side right now for the silver linings, but we can. Some of the recommendations from those who do research on children and technologies are around screen time. So for instance, there's been a long conversation about screen time and we say limit the amount of screen time. Well, actually what we find is that the amount of screen time isn't what's really key in children's social emotional learning, in their learning of concepts and academic concepts either. It's what they're doing on the screen. So this could be an opportunity for all of us to think about the kinds of activities that we all do, not just our children, but we all do online. Are we just watching things, or are we also creating things? Are we having productive conversation, or are we just skimming and scanning threads more passively? And so if we can be active and having interactive kind of the media that we work with being interactive and having those conversations with our children, that's actually the amount of screen time, for instance, or the amount of technology that young people are using, that the quality of the interaction that they're doing with that media is what matters, not the amount of time.
Times of disruption tend to lead to innovation in any industry, and I assume education is included there. You know, we figure out new ways to do things, you know, and teachers will too. So what are you going to be watching for over the course of this year in terms of innovative teaching approaches? Is there any area or any particular area that you're like, I wonder how that's going to play out, or anything that you're sort of keeping your eye on?
We're 20 years into the 21st century. We still have a lot of people saying, our schools need to be doing 21st century kind of work. And here we are 20 years into it. And we still see a large gap between what we ask of our young people to do in school and a lot of our school subjects and what we prepare teachers what tools we prepare them to use and how we think about what learning can look like too. We still think of kids in desks for, 6 hours a day or whatever the parameters are. And I think that we will see new images of what learning can look like, new tools that we can use to get us there. And really, I'm hoping that we start to see what we ask of what we do during the school day to mirror more what we're doing outside of school, the ways that we communicate, the ways that we make knowledge production. All of that is radically different than what we still kind of see. What we see, curricula that really hasn't changed much. Standards haven't changed much in many years in terms of adding in what's now possible with the technologies that we have. Children are always learning, and they are learning at home. They are learning in pods. They are with other young people. What they're learning while they're playing. There's a lot of community education and community groups learning while they're at church, learning while they right all of their spaces. They're always learning. Learning is not reserved for school, and this might help us see that in a way that we haven't seen as a society. And that would be a good reminder for us when we think about what school could be looking forward.
That's Anna Smith, an assistant professor in ISU's College of Education, speaking with Ryan Denham. She's part of a team working on a new website and webinar series for teachers and parents all about remote learning. We'll share the link at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. From the wildly colorful murals on Market Street and Constitution Trail to the classes in collage and drawing, the Illinois Art Station has been making a mark on Bloomington Normal since its founding 2 years ago. Some changes are ahead for the youth-centered arts organization, including relocation plans. WGLT Arts correspondent Laura Kennedy has more.
COVID-19 hasn't stopped all art in its tracks. The Illinois Art Station has recently struck out on its own to forge a new path in the community. Formerly associated with Illinois State University, the now public nonprofit provides hands-on experiences in visual arts for kids in the community. The Illinois Art Station's new executive director, Laura Jaster, says creating art is valuable for young people in that it allows them to learn about themselves and the world around them.
And it gives them an opportunity to really use their voice through a creative outlet. And so we really hope that we can reach all children in our community, but we do have a special focus on reaching children that would otherwise not have these experiences. So we try to work closely with underserved populations as well.
Laura, you were just named executive director for Illinois Arts Station. What is your vision for the future of the organization?
My vision is really to establish Illinois Art Station as a valuable resource for the community. We have done a lot of really great work, but we can really go beyond that as well. We can really reach a lot more people for our community. And I would love for Illinois Art Station to be something that is a ready thought for community groups, teachers, and families as a place where they can come to have these creative experiences and all of those positive outcomes that come with having those experiences.
Illinois Art Station has been linked with Illinois State University since its inception, but now there's a transition away from that, going independent and establishing a new location. Laura, can you tell me about that?
Yes, so we are very fortunate to have that history with Illinois State and to have had that initial partnership in our founding. And we will continue to partner with Illinois State University. We even now have graduate assistant students who come from Illinois State University, and I think we will continue to have very positive relationships with ISU. But just a month or so ago now, we have established ourselves as a public, nonprofit, independent institution. In a lot of ways, that allows us to just be more flexible and responsive to the community. Now, as an independent entity, we're able to do that. I think it also allows us to really become the community's Illinois Art Station. They get to have ownership in the sense that there's a lot more that we can kind of respond to. So that is really exciting for us. And as you mentioned, we are looking to establishing a permanent facility to house Illinois Art Station. It will be so wonderful to be able to invite people to us and to really create a home.
Well, there on Vernon, you are awfully close to Constitution Trail. Do you see the Illinois Art Station taking advantage of that natural location?
Oh, certainly. I think that this location provides a lot of opportunity for us to have connections with people who are walking along the trail and be able to see us as they come down that pathway and hopefully be intrigued by what they're seeing and want to step onto our grounds and come into our space.
The Illinois Art Station was involved with the Youth Mural Project in 2019. Do you anticipate other large-scale, colorful works to be added to the community?
Yes, I do, and I hope that we will be able to continue that. These mural projects were such a wonderful moment for IAS, but also for the youth of our community. And I think that they do a great job of telling our story of both Illinois Art Station as well as the community. And I know that the youth who participated had really meaningful experiences. The wonderful thing about these public art projects is the longevity of that. When people drive past this mural or they walk past the one on the Constitution Trail, you know, they get to participate in that in some way, and that's going to continue long after the project is completed. And so I do hope that we will continue to have these really beautiful, colorful, larger scale public art moments that IAS is spearheading.
That was Laura Jaster, the executive director for the now public nonprofit Illinois Art Station. I'm Laura Kennedy.
In response to COVID-19, the Illinois Art Station will try to utilize virtual programming for the fall. Hear more about that, plus how important community partnerships are to the arts organizations, at our website, WGLT.org. The Normal Town Council last night approved zoning changes to allow the Illinois Arts Station construction at Linden and Vernon. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories, which today came from Laura Kennedy and Ryan Denham. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM. Or follow us on Twitter. We're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.